everybody. Welcome to episode 639 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a spotlight episode on Uncanny X-Men number 5. It is the weekly series written by Matthew Rosenberg, Kelly Thompson, and Ed Brisson. This particular issue has R.B. Silva handling the pencils. We have Adriana D. Benedetto on inks, Rochelle Rosenberg doing the color work, and Chris Iliopoulos doing the letters. There's also a normal cover, or a regular cover, I should say, by Elizabeth Torque. And then we have some variants by John Tyler Christopher, Shane Davis, Michelle Dalecki, and Val Staples. So we found out last issue that X-Man is back, Nate Gray, and he seems more powerful than ever. For those not familiar, he was a character that showed up in the Age of Apocalypse event way back in the 90s. It was a pretty popular event. It's been revisited over the years. We've seen various iterations of the X-Men from that story and other X characters, X-Men villains and such, make their way into the regular Marvel Universe at various times. And X-Man himself, Nate Gray, actually had his own series that spun out of that. He was so popular. So these three writers have brought him back. He has recruited Magneto, Blob, Omega Red, and Angel as his four horsemen of salvation, and he's looking to remake the world as he sees fit. So far, the consequences we've seen of Nate's actions have included long extinct animals being revived and showing up in the wild, dinosaurs and the like. We've seen oil rigs under attack. Nate believes that the inhabitants of Earth, the human denizens of Earth, have been polluting the environment too long, and he sends some of his horsemen out to correct that. He also sends other horsemen out to remove weapons from hostile territories, which doesn't remove the hatred and doesn't remove the desire to destroy one's enemy. So it's had mixed results at best. We've also seen that Legion believes he knows how to stop Nate Gray, and he does feel responsible considering that he's the one that created the Age of Apocalypse universe, so to speak. So he's doing his best to try to stop X-Man, Nate Gray, but the X-Men don't trust him, and they imprison him in the Institute, tell the young X-Men, the kids, this generation's version of New Mutants, I suppose you'd say, to watch him. But those younger X-Men, they actually believe Legion, and they think that the older X-Men are making mistakes. So they free him, and they seem willing to go along with his plan. So this issue starts off, and we are 20 miles outside Yugostovol, Chernaya, and we see it's actually Kitty Pryde talking. And she's saying, I know what you're thinking. You really want to help people. You can't just sit back and do nothing. There's far too much evil in the world, too much anger and hatred. You have to challenge it. But that's not enough. You can't end a war by just taking away the guns, because people are still hating each other. And if you want to fix the world, you've got to show them there's a better way. And we see Apocalypse interrupt her. And all the while that she's narrating this, we're watching the X team that went to Eastern Europe trying to stop these citizens who've had their guns taken away from them from literally beating each other to death. It's almost like the guns were a deterrent. You were really risking your life if you were to attack somebody with a gun. But now that they know the guns aren't there, they've taken to attacking with their bare hands. And not to say it's not just as deadly. So it's pretty interesting. Anyway, as I said, Apocalypse basically poo-poos that idea. And Kitty says, excuse me? He says, no offense, child. It's just your worldview is so ridiculous. I didn't mean to interrupt your meaningless diatribe. Go ahead. And Kitty says, well, no, I'm always excited to hear the thoughts of a genocidal maniac. Please go on. And X-Man interrupts and he says, please, Kitty, no reason for unpleasantries. We're all friends in this room. So Apocalypse, why don't you tell me, if you were trying to save the world, what would you do? And he says, you disrespect me, you hold me captive, and you think that I'm going to give you my counsel and you're going to value it? And X-Men says, yeah, I do. And Apocalypse decides to humor. He says, very well. If you want to be the actual ruler of Earth, worthy of the Council of Apocalypse, there's a simple first step. You're kind of putting yourself out there as a god, like Apocalypse himself often does, right? And he goes on to say, yet you let false prophets lead the masses down the paths of their false idols. And X-Men, you can tell he's actually considering this. And meanwhile, Kitty's like, yeah, really helpful. So Apocalypse goes on to say, you want to save Earth? You've got to cleanse it of its delusions of holiness, rather. And Nate actually says, okay, let's give it a try. Kitty's beside herself, like, what? And so we see various churches or holy places like Vatican City and Mecca and some place in India that I couldn't possibly even attempt to pronounce. And we see these buildings that are the center of these faiths basically just disappear. And X-Men says, it is done. And Kitty's like, what did you just do? And Nate says, I cleanse the world of its fake houses of worship and false prophets. That line actually has caused some controversy, calling these fake houses of worship. He doesn't single out one religion or another. He's saying they're all fake. Honestly, I guess some Hindus were offended by this and they called for an apology from Marvel and from the writers. I'm all for inclusion and live and let live, but this is a comic book. They're not singling out the Hindu religion, saying it's false any more than they're saying anything else is false. This is the opinion of clearly a deluded villain. The role that X-Men is playing in this story. So I think everybody just needs to calm down a little bit when it comes to demanding apologies for fictional stories. If you don't like it, don't read it. But there's no reason to say that Marvel's persecuting the Hindi religion. It's ridiculous. So anyway, Kitty says, are you out of your mind? Bring him back. And X-Men says, no, but we discussed this. You didn't voice any objections. And she says, well, I didn't think you were going to take Apocalypse seriously. And X-Man says, well, he has a place on this council, same as you. And you opted not to debate. So I took his suggestion. That's interesting. So this is actually a council. These three people that he's kidnapped, Kitty Pride, Apocalypse, and the Senator. I didn't really take it as that. I don't really think your advisory council should be tied up, but whatever. That's just me. So X-Man goes on to say, I don't expect you to agree with him, actually quite the opposite, but I do expect you to take this counsel seriously and respect any decisions that come from it. Kitty's like, are you crazy? He says, look, I'm smart enough to know I don't have all the answers. If any of us knew for certain how to save the world, we would have already. So I'm listening to all sides and trying to find the best solution. And Kitty reminds him, but Apocalypse doesn't want to save the world. He wants to burn it down. So there aren't two sides to end. X-Men's heard enough. He basically gags Kitty with energy beam or some kind of a energy gag, I guess you'd call it, surrounding her mouth so she's unable to talk. And X-Men says, you know what, that's enough. It's your turn, Senator Allen. What would you like to see done? So meanwhile, Gulf of Mexico, 50 miles off the Louisiana coast, we see Jean Grey and her team finishing up with the rescue of all the workers from the oil rig that is now overgrown with plant and animal life. And now that all the rig workers are safe, they go to examine the rig. And Jean Grey's like, this doesn't make any sense. We're blobbing Omega Red, a distraction to keep us from X-Man. Like, what exactly is going on? Have they become eco-terrorists? Like, I don't... You know, they don't really understand what the heck's going on. And Jean's like, the bottom line is they put those men's lives in danger when they attacked, and who knows how many died. And Northstar answers, well, too many. And we're actually used to that from Omega Red and Blob. They're murders. But this doesn't make any sense. Like, the fact that this rig is just overgrown with flora and fauna. Meanwhile, at Beast Lab at the Xavier Institute, we saw at the end of last issue that a vial of the vaccine that supposedly cures people with the X gene and prevents it from manifesting, we saw that a vial of it had been stolen from Hank's laboratory, so he's actually checking out his camera to see if he can find out who stole it. And he runs a computer analysis based on the height, weight, build, posture, and movements to see if he can find some find a match. But we don't find out what his results are, but I am very, very curious. We only see the person from the back, and it's really, they're wearing a robe with a hood. Really can't see much at all from the picture, but I am very curious as to who it could be. Upstairs and outside, Glob is leading Jamie Madrox back to the mansion. We saw right at the end of last issue, he was able to convince Jamie to come and work with some of the younger X-Men along with Legion, because they do believe Legion has a plan to prevent whatever X-Man is trying to do. So when they get there, Jamie sees the wreckage of the mansion, says Legion did this. He's like, no, actually, this was Magneto, Blob, Omega, Red, and Angel. And Jamie says, Angel? Warren? Damn, who can you trust these days? And they let the rest of the young X-Men know they're back, including Legion. And Legion's actually very friendly when Jamie shows up, like, Madrox, it's good to see you. You know, I realize you might have some questions. I'm really sorry. And Jamie doesn't want to have anything to do with it. He's like, you kidnapped me. You chained me up. You don't get to touch me. I'm only doing this for the kids and for the X-Men. But you need to stay the hell away from me. Understood? And Legion, agrees. Whether he actually sticks to that or not remains to be seen. We also find out that what the kids are doing in the wreckage, they're digging their way down to Cerebro, because Legion believes he'll be able to use it to track down where X-Man is actually hiding. So X-Man is an Omega level mutant, and he knows how to hide himself really well, but he operates and vibrates at a different frequency, probably because he's technically from another universe. And so Legion's like, with just a couple of modifications, we should be able to use Cerebro to find him. Meanwhile, Jamie's asking the younger X-Men if they trust Legion. He's like, he doesn't have the best history with the X-Men. And Armor says, yeah, but he's the only one who seems to know what's going on around here. So Legion hears them talking and he says, you know what? I don't blame you for having your doubts, Jamie. And, I hurt you and I understand you're going to have reservations, but I'm going to try to earn that trust. And I aim to, I'm not your enemy. And so he puts Cerebro on. He doesn't have it on for very long before he's able to find X-Men pretty quickly. And he tells the rest of the young X-Men, all right, you guys ready to go save the world? And they are eager to get going. Meanwhile, back in Eastern Europe, outside Ukstovel, Chernaya, the horseman Magneto is standing there watching these two factions fight against each other while the X-Men are trying to separate as many of them as they can. And Jean's like, Storm says, what is Magneto doing? And Polaris says, well, as far as I can tell, nothing. He's just watching. It doesn't make any sense. And so she goes to him and says, what are you doing, Father? What's your play? And Magneto says, you need to stand down. You shouldn't be here. You all need to leave. You need to let these men sort this out for themselves now that the playing field has been leveled. And Polaris says, but they're going to kill each other. And Magneto says, and what would you have me do? Give them back their instruments of death? And Polaris ignores him and said, just tell us where X-Man is. This man that you hold in such high regard that you deemed it necessary to build a shrine in his honor when you took all the guns away. You formed them into this statue. Now, where do we find him? We need to talk to him. And Magneto says, you need to put the tribute back. Put it back in your place, and I'll tell you again, the X-Men need to leave. I'm following orders. I'm doing as I was commanded, and I don't wish to fight you, but I will if I have to. And Polaris says, fine, and she crumples the tribute or the statue into a metal ball drops it on the ground with an oops. And you can tell by the look on Magneto's face that he's very much not pleased with what she just did. Meanwhile, Psylocke's about to try something with the help of Sam. And Sam basically flies up off the ground, tackles Angel. They're trying to get him back to their side. So once Sam has Angel in his grip, he literally flies up out of the atmosphere so that they both pass out. As Polaris is now being attacked by Magneto, and it seems to be a little bit of a stalemate. And then we see Sam, Cannonball, and Warren, Angel, plummet back down to the ground at Psylocke's feet. So Warren recognizes her immediately, says, "Betsy." She says, "Hello, Warren. Please come back to us. What's happened to you? This isn't you." And Warren says, "You're wrong. This is the perfect distillation, the perfect version of my true self. Like, X-Men showed me the way. He cleared away all the noise. He's revealed to me who I am at my purest." And Betsy says, "But look around you. This is chaos. People are dying. This isn't the way to remake the world. This isn't what the X-Men stand for." And Warren argues further, saying, "This rebirth is pain, and it's fleeting. And when we're done, the Earth will be better off. It'll be worth it in the end. And it's not too late for you. You know, I'd love to have you on our side. You and I together again, it would be beautiful." And he says, "Please, Betts, all it takes is a word." And she says, "I'm sorry," because we see she's actually holding one of her psychic swords behind her back. And she basically slices through his neck with it. And he immediately falls to the ground, writhing in pain. She says, I'm sorry, Warren. We didn't see any other way." And Warren begins to transform. And as he turns back to her, we see he's back in his Archangel persona, where his wings look like they're made of metal. His skin is blue once again. And he's speaking in a much rougher voice as he turns to her and says, "I hope you're happy, Betsy. I hope it was worth it. You've taken the only peace I've ever known. You've ruined me forever." And the look on his face is one of pure rage. It is an incredible full-page image. That image is like worth the price of the book alone right there. It is absolutely amazing, and that's where the book ends. So really curious what it is about Betsy's power that turned Warren back into Archangel. What kind of effect is this going to have on X-Men's plans now that he's down to three horsemen instead of four? Also, the only one that was a hero before, all the other three, Toad, Omega Red, Magneto, they probably don't have, you know, the same kind of reservations, the same kind of restraint that on some level Warren had. So curious to learn more about that. Curious to learn more about what exactly X-Men Man's plan is. We're almost halfway, or I think we are halfway through the story, actually. I think it's a 10-issue weekly story. So this is issue 5. We're halfway, and we're starting to see what X-Man is doing, and we're understanding why. You know, he basically wants peace on Earth and to make a utopia. But again, I got to agree with Betsy Braddock, Psylocke, this isn't the way that you go about doing it, but we have started to get some answers, and I look forward to issue 6 to get even more. R.B. Silva, beyond that last page that was really incredible, does a good job storytelling-wise, panel to panel. His panels tend to be pretty large. A lot of them are kind of cinematic. They're large horizontal panels that span the pages. As far as the whole religion thing, again, you know, I mentioned some religions were pretty ticked off, the Hindu religion specifically. And again, I just think it's silly. It's a comic book. It's a fictional story. Nobody's disparaging your religion any more than they were disparaging Catholicism or the Muslim faith, because I think those are the three places that basically had their central, like, seat of power, you know, worship. It's like Vatican City disappeared. Mecca, the temple there disappeared. And then this temple in India, that's the home of the Hindu religion. Again, they're all being called false by X-Man. Clearly, you know, Apocalypse is making a point about faith and godhood and all that. And it's nothing personal. I don't actually mean anything by it. So everybody just calm down a little. It's really silly when you stop to think about it. So we're, as I said, halfway through. We haven't seen Cyclops show back up. I'm expecting that to happen in this issue. And I'm also unsure if Legion can be trusted. I mean, beyond the fact that he's a Legion and he's inherently crazy, there's also a few panels in here where it makes me wonder if he's not running his own, like, long con. Like, he's moving the pieces around the board. It just, I mean, we use this Cerebro. He just gets a look on his face. There. And he just looks malevolent. And so I wonder how that relationship is going to work out. And might we see a schism in the X-Men? Might not these young X-Men go with Legion? Might not Jean kick them out of the X-Men for freeing Legion? Where does Jamie fit in with all this? Why does Legion insist on having Jamie on his side? Because he supposedly he knows what's coming, and Jamie's the only one that can stop it. So how does that happen exactly? It's a bit of a wait and see, but I've really been enjoying the X-Men Disassembled storyline. It's been a lot of fun, and I think especially what's great about what these three writers have done is they have created a title that's rich in X-Men lore and rich in X-Men history, but you don't have to be caught up with everything that's been going on currently in the X universe over the last few years. I think this is a great jumping on point for anybody who wants to get their X-Men fix and hasn't been doing so for a while. So I do recommend it. I think it's a really great issue. From the art to the color, everything is top-notch. Specifically, the colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. I mean, you kind of always expect them to be fantastic because Rochelle's a real professional, one of the best working in the business. But, you know, I always want to give a shout-out to her because the colors really sing in this book. It helps set the mood. It's more of a primary color palette, you know, comic booky, superhero-y, really gives a good comic book feel to the story and the X-Men rather than grounded in some kind of gritty realism or something like that. So I think that's going to do it for the spotlight on X-Men number 5. I do want to remind everybody about our 12 days of the Comic Source giveaway. And the giveaway that we're giving for this episode is the original graphic novel, X-Men graphic novel, actually, called God Loves, Man Kills. This graphic novel, this story, was kind of the basis for the second X-Men movie, X2. So it's, you know, we meet William Stryker, and you know, we see that his son has powers and stuff like that. So I think it's a really good story. It's a classic story, and I'm sure a lot of you will enjoy it. So just to remind everybody, the way that you win, you need to retweet the official tweet announcing this episode, and you also need to send me a direct message with the code word, the secret code word, and then you'll be entered in a drawing to win that graphic novel. So I think based on the strength of this last page, with Warren being transformed back into a previous iteration of himself, we're going to go with Archangel as the secret code word. So if you want to win yourself a copy of God Love, Man Kills, be sure you retweet out the tweet that announces this episode and send us a direct message with that secret code word. So, one more thing, there is a link in the show notes to the contest rules. If you need to be reminded how to enter, you can enter, as many days as you want. You know, there's, I think, 14 episodes over these 12 days, 14 giveaways. So you're more than welcome to enter each one of those, but keep in mind that once you've won once, you're not eligible to win again because I want to get the prizes out to as many people as possible. So trying to prevent having repeat winners. If for some reason you're the only one who responds to a particular episode, even if you've won previously, I guess you, in that case, will get to win a second time. So, all right. I want to thank everybody for joining. As always, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.